Being a chef means keeping your cool in the kitchen. It's up, it's up. And with Resi Priority Notify and Global Dining Access through my Amex Platinum card,
right this way,
it's nice to try someone else's food for a change. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
This is KJ Live.
Yeah!
With Chris Johnson. And Chris is having conversations with influencers in the sports world and entertainment industry.
Hey, hey.
Now here's Chris Johnson.
You're now tuned in to KJ Live. I'm your host, Chris Johnson, at Point Forward Pro on Twitter. Today's guest on the show is one of the highly regarded trainers in America. Has worked with several collegiate and NBA and international ball players. One of the top guys at what he does, and has worked with Kawhi Leonard, Kyle Kuzma, Tony Snell, and others. Clint Parks, what's up, my man?
It's okay, Jay. Thanks for having me on today, bro. I appreciate it.
Man, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show, man. You helped me kick this whole thing off last year, man. We was doing the March Madness, the lives, the coverage, the wall-to-wall NCAA tournament coverage.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we definitely going to bring it back, man. It should be extremely exciting. Clint, what you been up to, man? What you been up to lately?
Nothing, just the same old, just training and, you know, dealing with COVID like everybody else. Things aren't exactly like they were, obviously. They're trying to push back to more towards normal in that direction. So that's been positive. But, you know, just the basketball 24/7, you know how it goes. Just the life of a basketball junkie.
Yeah, and we talk about the life of a basketball junkie, man. I know a lot of people out there kind of, they have an idea about what that looks like, but I kind of want you to tell us what that looks like from when you wake up in the morning to when you go to bed. What does a typical day in the life of Clint Parks, CPSA, look like?
I mean, it's pretty much basketball from the time I wake up, whether starting workouts, you know, with my young kids that are and on homeschool right now. And so got that during the day. And then when school gets out in the afternoon, the kids that are in regular school kind of transition with them, and it's just going nonstop. Like, and then like a night like last night, you know, I have a game where I'll go to a Long Beach State game, watch one of my college kids play. Shout out to Long Beach State, Big West Conference champs. And so, so I'm either training, or I'm going to a college game, going to a high school game, you know, or just going back to the gym at night. It's pretty much basketball consumes my life. And I mean, for some people, it's like find balance, do this. But I mean, this has always been my outlet, my thing. And I mean, it's a positive thing too. So I love it.
Yeah. And it seems like, you know, you're the type of guy that I know you've come to. When I was calling games, you came to a game at CSUN. I think it was a Sierra Canyon game. But you're the kind of guy that, you know, you really intently are watching the game. You're watching players. You're watching moves. You're watching coaches. You're watching pretty much everything in the game. How important is it for you to go to these games when you're training a player just to get a better understanding or grasp of his game and what he needs to work on?
Oh, that's everything going to the game, because you have to, like, you have to see, okay, like, what's working, what's not working, what tweaks we got to make when we're in workouts, like, what do we need to emphasize more? What are we spending too much time on? Like, you know, the worst thing you could be is, you know, this is a hooper yourself, like, is a workout guy. If it don't translate to the game, if it's not like, if the work isn't translating to the game, then what are we doing? You know, like, yeah. Nobody gets paid off the workout. One on zero.
So these guys that look great in the workouts with nobody there or in front of some cones, you know, they're hitting every shot. They're making every play, making every cut. But you put a body out there, a little bit of defense and a couple of refs.
It's the worst. It's the absolute worst. So I can't stand it. So I've always said, like, you got to be able to do it in the game and, you know, to be able to break it down, go to the game and see it, see what you're doing right, see what you're doing wrong. And it's like, it's constant evolution from on their end and my end too. Cause I'm still trying to get better. I'm still watching different guys. I'm watching workouts on the internet.
Yeah.
I'm studying different players. I'm just constantly trying to learn, give my players that advantage.
Clint, we have, you know, a lot of a diverse variety of listeners that tune in to the show. When you talk about
a player that's a workout player or a practice player. And that player, said player, has issues with translating stuff to the game. How do you, as a skills specialist, as a player development guru, how do you implement a plan, a strategy for that player to become game ready, to not be the workout guy anymore? How do you go from a workout guy to a game guy?
It's hard, but I think the thing I always try to focus on is that, you know, a lot of things that you can get off in a workout without, even if you have like dummy defense, like the defense is changing when the game starts. Mm-hmm. So, you know, more aggressive defenders, physical defenders. I always tell kids, like tell guys at every level, you beat good defenders, you beat aggressive defenders by keeping it simple. They want you to dance. They want you to try to mix them and try to go for the highlight. Like, you're not really, like, against a sound defensive player, you're not really getting no highlight off. Like, you're not about to just shake them something crazy. You're gonna have to beat them with fundamentals, you know? And so that's what I always try to – that's why I preach, you know, keeping it simple, basic so much, because the game in the half court, especially in college, the floor is bogged down. There's no spacing. You could be playing against some teams like Virginia, who send five guys back in transition, and they're just like, they might have one guy go to the glass for offensive glass. So you're not really getting nothing in transition. Right. So your game really needs to be, you know, you need to be good in tight spaces. You need to be able to make shots. You got to make open shots, and that's where it starts. And if you're constantly, a lot of guys that are good in a workout, like, they're just getting all types of extra moves off. And then some guys just got a mental block. Like, there's nothing, like, some guys are just 3:30 shooters.
Yeah.
You know, 3:30 p.m. and butter. It gets 7:30, 8 o'clock. Woo! The pressure get on, the lights come on. You know, it's just a different type of anxiety they might get. And it's just, I mean, it's hard to shake that. It is.
Yeah, my pop, the great Marcus Johnson, used to always kind of have a thing about that. You know, he always talk about when I was coming up, you know, players, you know, certain players excel without refs, without the smell of popcorn in the arena, without fans in the stands, without the lights being on. Some guys, you know, they look all world with nobody in the gym, but you put a body in front of them and an arm check, and it's a whole nother story. Staying on development, I wanted to get your opinion on first high school programs in the Southern California area, which you have seen a lot of as far as basketball is concerned. What do you consider the top two or three high school basketball programs as far from a development standpoint, guys that go there and you know for a fact that coaches are working on a daily basis to get them guys better?
Dang, that's a tough question.
Sorry to interrupt you. So I think I like Corona Centennial and what Josh Giles does over there as far as how players go in and, like, you know, it seems like they work on a lot of stuff. And then by the time they leave, they're pretty doggone good basketball player. Is there any other IE schools or maybe OC or any programs like that?
Yeah, Corona Centennial, those guys get better. They have they have a good system set in place with his assistants, former players that are working with the guys as well. So you can see the emphasis on development from that standpoint. I don't know how much Kleckner does with development, but I just know over the years, like, his guys have they're usually college ready defensively.
At Awanda,
at Awanda, they play hard. You know, Reggie Morris has done a good job over the years, developing guards, developing players, preparing them for college and helping them get on that track to the next level. Russell White was another one. He was really good over the years, you know, when he was at Crespi, with obviously DeAnthony Melton and Brandon Williams in the NBA now as well. Dave Rabibo, he's doing his thing at Harvard Westlake.
Absolutely.
You know, Moose gets guys better. You know, that Brentwood, you're dealing with a different type of kid, but he does a good job coaching them up and developing the guy. I mean, there's so many coaches out here. I know I'm missing some, but there's a lot of really good. I mean, I think in the Orange County, I'm not really an OC guy. Like, I don't know.
Oh, you're not an OC guy?
I don't know the lay of the land like that, you know, so I can't really speak to what over the years, you know, how the basketball is, like, development-wise.
When you were working with middle school kids, you work with a lot of them, you got some pretty good players, and parents are coming to you seeking out your advice for schools, you know, for programs or to continue their basketball and athletic journey on the next level. What factors in a program do you sort of take into account when you give advice to parents?
First thing is, what level of player are you? You know, that's where the honesty has to start. Like, what are you? Are you somebody that's going to play varsity as a freshman? Are you going to play JV? Are you going to play freshman? So we got to separate that right there. You know, so say you're a varsity player. So everybody pretty much knows me. If you're a kid that's going to be playing varsity as a freshman, I'm going where I'm going to have a role, big role, preferably the ball in hands, and be able to play through mistakes and learn on the floor, because you get better. Like, developing and training is like, this is like, that's my livelihood, right? But the most important piece to development is live reps. I'm no dummy, you know, like, we could drill workout all day, but if you don't get into live reps, you're not in a situation where you can play through mistakes, then your development is going to be stunted.
Thanks.
And so that's like, okay, how does the coach play? What's his style of play? What's his MO? How is he, you know, with young players? Does he feel comfortable playing young guards, or is he like, oh, is he like the guy like, oh, I got to give my seniors, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you got to ask honest, you got to really evaluate the situation, evaluate the style of play, all of that. And you got to be honest. Like, I'm always honest with coaches up front. Like, what I'm expecting, like, okay, you tell me what you're expecting, where you're at. Like, I don't want there to be no surprise. I always tell people, I'm not a little kid. I don't like surprises.
Yeah.
Don't surprise me with nothing mid-season, because then I'm going to be an issue. You told me one thing and you're doing another thing.
It's a problem. It's a problem.
I don't, you know what I'm saying? Like, if I'm like, you know what you're going to get with me.
So, but that's what. No, I didn't mean to cut you off, but on the same hand, on token, Clint, like, you know, when coaches, especially on the high school level, I mean, you promise kids anything as far as playing time, it becomes problematic because there's a lot of dynamics and factors that could change between that day and by the time practice, they go through summer league and, you know, fall practice and all that. The kid may just not be good enough. And so, you know, we didn't know that. We thought he was good enough before you got us. You gassed us up telling us he was this and that. And Clint, real quick, he turned out not to be like that. Now you're giving me problems because I'm not playing him. How does that work, bro?
But I can't relate to that because I don't gas.
Oh.
I don't gas up, because that's when you gas up, then you run into that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, don't gas. If you don't gas on the front end, then you're not getting, you know, like Larry Shire used to tell me all the time, undersell, underpromise, overdeliver. You know, don't promise more than you can deliver. Like, if you're just honest and straightforward, like, from the jump street, then there's no issues.
Yeah.
Like, I remember years ago, I had Jeremy Lieberman. He and the kid played Calabasas, Wyoming. He was good. We had went to Crespi, and I took him, like, he was in eighth grade, and they had London. They already had, like, London Ferrantes there. I don't know if he was, I think he was, like, a grade older. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Russ just told me what it was. Like, would love to have him, you know, but I got a point guard a year ahead of him. Like, so.
He go rock with him.
You know what I'm saying? Like, he's going to have to play behind him and learn. And, like, I was like, damn, you know. But I respected that because Russ was real with me. And so I was like, okay, we're going to Calabasas. Like, and me and Russ remained cool, you know, this is 12 years ago. We remained cool all that time. But just that little bit of honesty and letting me know exactly what it was and where he was went a long way. Yeah. It saved a friendship possibly, like, you know, like, it saved a lot of drama in the middle because you up front. And that's all you can ask.
Yeah. No, communication is key, man. It's the everything. Key to everything, dog. And if somebody keeps it real with you from jump and there are no surprises, I mean, you're going to handle it a lot better. I mean, you knew what it was.
Yeah, you might not like it, but it's like you got to revert back to, okay, this is what he said it was going to be.
And it's amazing to when you know, hear all the stories about how many parents and people go through those issues with coaches, and how many people have that situation where they were promised something and it didn't happen. But staying on that topic, sort of this, you know, the grassroots dynamics and drama of the high school era, how do you think, you're out here in LA, we have a couple of high profile programs. Some of the players on those programs are pretty high profile in their own right. Millions of followers on social media, you know, big time type guys. How do you think this generation of Southern California hoopers handles all the attention? The fact that these guys are now signing NIL deals in high school. You got guys, you know, Beats by Dre and LeBron's son, and, you know, these guys out here in Sierra Canyon and all that. How do you think this, the generation, the mindset today of this generation handles all of what we would have considered extras back in the day?
I mean, I think they do a pretty good job as a whole. You know, there's some that are a little more loose than others. It's just hard. Like, you know, we probably would all, you know, I tell people, I said, I probably would be tripping out a little bit if I was going through that myself, getting some of that, like all the extras that these kids have coming their way, because of their talent.
Right.
You know, and I think it's just, I think the ones that deal with the best are the ones that have people around them that are helped be able to help them filter what's real and what's not, and at the same time stay level headed.
And I'm starting to feel like this generation was born to be able to handle extras better than us. When you think about my kids, you know, they had iPhones when they were 5, 6 years old, 7 years old. So they've been technology based from jump. So I can't sit there with my old school thinking, you know, hey, get off your phone. You know, don't be looking at your phone before practice. No, I mean, if he's going to look at his phone, it's fine, because it doesn't take him out of his lock-in, because that is who they are. I think you find in our culture, you got the old heads versus the young heads. You got the kind of the old way of doing it, and these old sort of ideologies about basketball. I think it's time to start to put things into context and accept the generation for who they are and understand that they can't do it like us and we couldn't have did it like them.
No, that's true. You're exactly right. You know, you're exactly right. You know, some old heads are going to be stuck in their ways. I think the old head problem is when, you know, you're caught up in the extras, so to speak, and then the game isn't matching up with the extras, you know? Yeah. That really irks a lot of old heads. Like, a lot of old heads, like, that understand both sides, they're like, I get it, because they had some extras to them, too. They was just different extras back in the day. It wasn't like they wasn't on no extras. The extras just changed.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, the extras are shining. We're talking about your extras more than your game. You know, that's when the old heads get beefy.
Yeah.
Like, okay, so now you're out there like you don't really love the game, you know?
Yeah.
It's like the old, like, Rodman. Who was more extra than Rodman?
Right.
But you knew Rodman when the game hit, you know, he was 20 rebounds. And he was hard. He was playing defense the whole nine. A lot of these dudes, they get the fame or whatever, and then it's just extras.
Yeah.
Then it's the game not looking the same. And then it's like, okay, that's where the disconnect is. Like, come on now.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Yeah. No, it's a disconnect. But I also think that overwhelmingly, old heads have, I guess I call it jealousy, envy towards the younger generation because, you know, of the attention and the level of ease, it seems like things are given and handed. And that might not be the case. It's like we act like these kids, old heads act like these kids aren't working hard, aren't busting their ass, didn't have the same goals, aren't getting up at five. And some of them are getting up at 5 a.m. You know, they're doing the same thing. They just got cell phones and it's on social media. Now they get the tweets.
Old heads just want their flowers.
That's it.
They just want to hear the young heads say, man, you know, you paved the way for us to get this big bag.
Hey, even if you don't mean it, just say it.
You know what I'm saying? They just want their respect. That's it. Because the money is so much different now. Yeah. And so, you know, like you look up and you're like, man, I was so much better than what we're seeing now. And so they're like, man, like we paved the way for y'all to get this money. And so when they feel like they're not respected, that's why you see like so many of the young dudes love Bubba Chuck Iverson so much, because Iverson shows so much love to this generation of Hooper.
Yeah.
Like he always just so love to where you see Oakley get on the podcast and he like, Giannis is weak.
Let's touch on that. So Oakley said, Giannis, if Giannis played back in the 80s and 90s in that era, he'd be a role player, a bench guy. He would be MVP, a star. Now, I have a thought process behind it, and I want you to hear me out. Oakley's talking about the physicality of the game. Now, whenever we discuss physical and skill, the conversation always gets murky. I would call it murky because people don't want to ever acknowledge or address the actual consequences and effects of physical play, of 80s, 90s physical play. Clint, nowadays, it's refs, it's people, it's video reviews, it's all type of stuff that you cannot do that you're going to be busted with. And this is a valid point. There was a time, believe it or not, this is to the audience, the younger members of the audience, there was a time when basketball was played by guys that was trying to hurt you, the guys that would go out and do things purposely to hurt you. And there really wasn't much you could do about it, but try to finish the game in fear. This is what Oakley's referring to. He's challenging the manhood of Giannis. He's saying Giannis as a man, as the kid that grew up in Greece selling gum on the street, is not tough enough to handle the 80s and 90s. Clint, I want your thoughts on that.
You see what Giannis looks like right now? Giannis is going straight down to the block, and he's doing the same thing that he's doing now. Like Isaiah Thomas said, okay, you're gonna foul him really hard. You're going to hit him.
Right.
Okay, now what else are you going to do?
But how do we know what happens after he gets fouled? Is he going to respond to Oakley the same way he's responding to these dudes nowadays, Maxi Klobler and all these dudes? Are you going to respond? I mean, I think that's my point, Clint. Oakley is banking all his whole statement on the fact that him and his dudes back then are going to punk Giannis. They're going to punk him.
They might punk him a bit, like when he first gets in the league. Like it might have been like he might struggle.
Yeah, that's what I said.
This development that he's showing over time.
Same way.
You're on that perimeter, Oakley, and you're going to move those puppies, and they're not going to be working like that.
Hey, yo, I said that whole thing to say I still believe, even regardless of getting punked, anything, Giannis will be like a 26, 27, and like a 17, 18 guy. I feel like Giannis was built for the 80s and 90s. His style, his bruising, just linebacker, I'm going through you style, and then eating glass in an era where, you know, rebounds were a lot higher because of the nature of the game. I think that he would have dominated, to be quite frank. But you make a great point. He would have got used to it. Just like we remember, we saw Giannis when he first got into the league. He was a little, you know, fresh-faced and wide-eyed, but then he figured it out pretty quickly. Yeah, that's an interesting deal. Moving on to the college game, brother. What do you think about the transfer portal and what it's done to college recruiting? Is the high school senior now irrelevant or what?
The high school senior that's special is never going to go out of style, as we know.
Facts.
And it goes back to the tiers. The high school senior that's like on the cusp of maybe getting a deal, they're kind of like phasing away from him, because they're like, oh, we could go to the portal and use that scholarship
on a sure shot. So,
yep. So with the portal has brought on like a whole new issue for high school kids, because now it's like coaches are under pressure to win now. Obviously, there's not really time for development. So if your administration's on you, you're going for the kid that's 21. 22 over the kid that's 17, 18. You hear nonstop, what's the key to college basketball? Get old, stay old. You know? And so therefore, it's like if you're coming in 17, 18, you better be special. Obviously, your Chet Holmgrens, your Jabari Smiths, your Paulo Banqueros, like those three freshmen, like right there, like that you hear about all season, like they're going to go in and play wherever they go.
Yeah.
But that's not the case for every freshman, you know, and there's a learning curve. And then some coaches don't like playing freshmen. So the portal is like, okay, let's go get somebody who's been in college 3 years. He might want to move up or he might want to move down or whatever it may be. And now it's like the young guy, okay, well, we don't got time for you right now. We got to win. My AD says I got to win now or I'm losing my job. So I'm going to trust a dude who's older, who's more seasoned. So it's hard for the high school senior right now. It's stressful for some good high school seniors too. And I don't necessarily agree with it because I've said this over and over again. That portal is getting a lot of coaches in trouble too because a lot of these guys are leaving, bouncing around three schools. And it's like you've been below average at every stop. Like just because you're in the portal, everything that glitters isn't gold. I say it all the time. There's a lot of bad goods in that portal.
Wow.
Buyer beware.
So I would think that when you trickle, it trickles down now to the guys back in the, like back in my day, like, you know, I got a scholarship. Tremaine Folks got a scholarship on our Crenshaw team. We were basically the top two players, but then four other guys got scholarships too. We probably won't see those days unless everybody's just super raw or at a prep school type situation where a regular high school, like, you know, a regular high school, Sarah Canyon, you have to be an elite level high school, but you won't see the days of guys getting those scholarships that if you weren't the man on your team because of, I guess, the super senior or the top guy now being kind of rendered irrelevant because of the coaching preference. That's kind of an interesting deal. It kind of crushes your, you know, I remember, you know, when you went to high school, you know, you had these dreams and aspirations of going D1. D1 was everything, and D2 or D3 or college basketball was everything. And now it sounds like a lot of guys won't get that opportunity. When do you think, at what moment do you think like this emphasis shifted? I mean, because even before the transfer portal became a thing, coaches were already kind of leaning towards getting older as it was.
Coaches don't want to develop. Development takes time. You're trying to get somebody better. You're saying, okay, he's here, but I could take him here. So in between is all the work you got to do. You got to have managers that are dedicated. You got to have, because you have an hour limit on how much you can work with guys. So Eric Musselman's kind of like mastered it. He goes out and he gets like high level grad assistants, managers, guys that can be on the floor unlimited with the players. And so they're basically your eyes and ears, working your guys out, getting your guys better, pounding them every day. Boom, boom, boom. This is what you need to be working on. And so to develop, if you're at a mid-major or you're at a low major, like now you're trying to, you develop a guy and now the high major is just going to come in and cherry pick and say, oh, we want you now. We didn't want you in high school. You were weak, but you're a late
bloomer. You're good now. You're good now.
You're good now. So, yeah, we're rocking with you. And a lot of people will fall for that.
Yeah. Who do you think are some of the best outside of Musselman at Arkansas, some of the best development programs in college basketball?
In college basketball? Dang. Best development programs.
Would you consider Kentucky? Would you consider Kentucky a good development program?
When Kenny Payne was there, I would.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What about Duke?
Duke? I mean, yeah, their guys get better. I mean, their guys get better. Like, their guys get better. I'm not a Duke guy, but they get better.
What do you think about Kansas as a development program?
I mean, I liked it when Danny Manning was there. Like, all the posts, all the three fours, the footwork was going crazy. The Morris twins, all those dudes, you know, over the years, you know, some of these people forget how important it is to have high level assistant coaches.
Right.
You know, you see there's good development in the Mountain West. You look at, like, what's going on at, like, Wyoming, my old school. Obviously, like, Coach Linder's done a good job. San Diego State, Fisher and Descher have done a good job over the years. Colorado State, Nico Medved, Leon Rice. That's a conference I'm really familiar with and I follow a lot. So, you know, there's good schools in the Pac-12. So there's good schools everywhere. It's just understanding. I always say, like, you really got to do your homework. All the answers to the tests are out there. You just got to really lock in and study it.
Yeah. kind of ask questions, do your own research, start trying to figure some things out.
Go to practices. I like to go to practices. Okay, what are we working on? And I'm not just going to one practice, and I like pulling up unannounced. Because like, you already know I'm coming for weeks or days at a time. You going to dress it up nice.
Yeah.
You going to dress it up nice. Like, no, I want to know what it looks like on a daily basis in here.
Yeah.
I'm watching, like, you've been there 3-4 years. Like, I don't want to just hear, oh, the kid don't want it. He don't want it. He don't. Nah, this is your job. You signed him. Your job is to get him better. He don't want it. Not good enough. Like, no, you got to get him better. And so guys that have been three years, 4 years at a place and haven't improved, like, that's never a good look.
Yeah. What do you think is the most, I guess, successful methods when it comes to getting a guy better on the collegiate level? Is it emphasis on shooting? Is it an emphasis on conditioning? Is it an emphasis on ball handling? I mean, what do you think is the most important skill set for a guy to improve upon? And again, it depends on who you are, but just universally speaking, yeah, talk to me.
Starts with the Jader.
Yes, sir.
Starts with it. Yeah. Like, that opens up everything. And it's really like, it's the San Antonio Spurs used to use this, they probably still do, but it's like daily vitamins.
Mm.
Like, you got to take them every day.
Yeah,
you're for daily, them to work.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They got to take them every day for them to work. So it's like, that's like the approach with like skill development. Huh. Okay, 20 minutes before practice, 30 minutes before practice on the floor, 30 minutes after. Now that you come back 30 minutes or 45 minutes at night, but you're there before practice, after practice, 20 minutes. Now you got 40 minutes of working individually.
Yeah.
And you stack that up 5 days, 6 days. Like, you keep doing that, doing that, doing that. Like, you're going to see the progression over time.
Yeah.
I always tell my guys, please don't be the guy who shows up right before practice running in, tying his shoes and rushing on the court right before the huddle starts. And don't be the guy who's sprinting to the door right when the practice ends. Oh, I'm out. Like, don't be that person. And there's a lot of players that are like that, and there's a lot of coaches that are like that. And when you're like that, you're really going to have a hard time improving the way you want to improve or the way your people might want you to improve.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm always on track record. I'm always on track record. How are you talking? Like, are you giving me the car salesman development speech? Like, no, I'm not rolling with that.
What does the car salesman development speech sound like? Just give me an example. I'm the guy. Give it to me.
Oh, we love the gym. We're big on being in the gym. We're a huge development program. Like, no, stop.
We're big on being in the gym.
Yeah, we're not. Like, stop. Stop. Like, no. Haven't seen you guys. Haven't seen one player come in and leave completely different. Haven't seen you guys take a no-star or lowly rated player and put him on the NBA NBA draft radar. Haven't seen any of that. Like, I need to see that, bro. If I'm thinking this kid's NBA, like, what are your credentials? Like, who have you developed and brought up for me to be like, okay, like, he's done this.
Yeah.
And some people, you know, they got to, like, just like when I started, people took a chance on me and have given me an opportunity, you know. So there's some guys that are, like, hungry and motivated, and you know they're really going to be in there, you know, like pushing the kid, getting him in the gym, you know, making sure he's getting his work in the morning, making sure he's in shape, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And so you have some of that, but you got to – man, you got to love the gym, coaches, players.
Yeah, you do, both. On both sides of the spectrum, on the coach and the player side. I remember being at UCLA in the mid-90s, part of that program. And Lorenzo Romar was our development guy, along with Mark Gottfried. So they were the guys that'd be playing one-on-one with us before practice. Then they'd be the scout team during practice. And then we'd get three-on-three and other knockout situations after practice. So you talk about two guys. I think Gottfried, you know, he was really good at Alabama, so he could shoot it. Lorenzo Romar played in the league, lefty point guard, bouncy at the time, still banging out. You know, it was like it was a situation going on. But the reality was, Clint, we when you have a coach that loves the gym in college as much as you should, you have no choice but to get your ass into the gym. You have no choice because you know Coach Romar is going to be there. And if you don't show up, it's like you looking bad now. And, you know, it's speaking to your work ethic, to your dedication. This is back in the day where, you know, you didn't want to have
MJ's calling at the coaches. MJ's like, what's good? Like, why KJ not getting no burn?
Man.
You know, he hollering at Lorenzo. Like, Zoe, come on. Like, out there. Come on, what's going on? Like, oh, but KJ's in the gym. So it's like, okay. He's working. He's getting better. You know what I'm saying? It's like that year.
Makes it easier.
In fact, you came back in great shape.
Yeah.
After being at dinner with your mom, it's like that type of stuff.
Yeah. And that's what it takes. I mean, that's what it takes to make that jump. But Clint, before college, right, when you're recruited and you're thinking about a school, we want to talk about a fit for a school. How does one sort of discern or figure out a fit? Me personally, I'll just give you quick on my experience. I had a few schools, Washington State and Kelvin Sampson, Arizona State and Bill Frieder, Utah, Rick Majerus, Coach K and Duke wanted me to come through and walk on. And I had Cornell and UCLA were like my six opportunities that I was legitimately looking at. And I wasn't thinking fit back then. I was thinking legacy play. My dad went to UCLA. It's UCLA. It's right in the backyard, et cetera, et cetera. So I wanted to talk to you, though, just from a different lens and a different perspective. How do you view a fit for perspective, the right fit for a prospective ball player going into college?
What level? It always starts the same. What level are you? Okay, so you were City Section Player of the Year, right?
Yeah.
Oh, we had to be playing day one. Yeah. We have to be playing day one. Like, we just have to be.
Yeah.
Like, City Section Player of the Year, like, that's like, especially at that time, that's like, okay, you're to the league.
Yeah.
Like, he's going to be to the league eventually. So, we got to be on the floor. And so, my biggest thing, you probably see me tweet about it all the time. I kind of say it jokingly, but it's like roster evaluation 101. Like, I'm really breaking the roster down.
See, that's key.
My ego is always to the side. And I tell people this. When Jaden was coming out, McDaniels, Calipari was recruiting him, right?
Yeah.
And that was when I started, like, I started talking to Coach Cal and stuff. And he'll kind of, like, Debo you in making you feel like if you don't come here, well, you don't want to compete. You're scared to compete. Like, you have no competitive juices in you. And so this isn't the place for you anyway. And so if you got your ego and your pride in the way, you'll be like, man, he trying to make me feel like a sucker. Like I'm afraid to bump. When it's like, no, it's not about that. Because you're a pro, you're trying to get to the league. So what is the best situation for you to get there? And 9 times out of 10, a lot of people don't want to keep it all the way funky, but it's what is the best situation for you to get to the league and where can you go to get there as fast as possible? That's just being real.
Yeah.
Like, if you've got one-and-done talent, you're trying to be one-and-done. You're not trying to be two-and-done.
Yeah.
And you feel like you're a one-and-done dude. And so you got to look at the roster. You got to see who's there, who's coming back, who ahead of you was told they were going to play and had to sit a year. And now things may have cleared up a little bit. And so now they're thinking, okay, now this is my year to play. Mm-hmm. And so for you to jump all those guys, you're going to have to be Paolo Banchero, Chet, Jabari Smith.
A real one.
Matter. It doesn't matter who they have, who they bring, who else is coming. Like, you're playing. You're playing, and there's no doubt about it. And that's like, okay, being real about where you are as a player.
Yeah.
But looking at the roster, you know what I'm saying? Do they have a need for me, like a real, real need, or they just want me? Does the roster tell me they need me? You know what I'm saying? The roster will tell you if they need you.
Yeah.
You're a point guard, no point guards on the roster. You know what I'm saying? You're coming in. Point guard play has been shaky. You know, like, okay, the coach needs a PG, like, really bad.
Yeah.
Okay, you know, you're somebody who can start. You know, coaches, like, your game and your resume says that. There's 2-3 point guards in the roster, and you're walking in telling yourself, nah, I'm different. I tell people all the time, don't use the word I'm different.
Mm-mm.
No. The dude before you say he was different too when he had to sit on that bench for 1-2 years when there was multiple situations where he could have walked in and just got to the money.
Yeah. No, it's a process, man. And you really got to have people in your ear that know what the hell they're talking about too. That, I think that's big. That's a big issue today with a lot of these ball players and stuff, is that the people that surround them typically don't know what they're talking about. And there's a lot of bad advice. And a lot.
The most dangerous person is someone that doesn't know basketball, but thinks they know basketball.
Man, that's a scary situation.
Aaron Davis tweeted a long time ago, be careful who you learn the game from.
Fox Sports Radio has the best sports talk lineup in the nation. Catch all of our shows at foxsportsradio.com. And within the iHeartRadio app, search FSR to listen live.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing.
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Because you'll take those habits with you, and you'll take that mindset with you throughout, and you'll get around some real ones, some real hoopers, and it's like you're going to be feeling real silly and kind of embarrassing.
So you gotta these parents, these kids, gotta study the roster.
Yeah.
You have to. Because even if, okay, you come in and you're hooping, like multiple players have been there at your position already, the coach is going to go with who he's comfortable with. And then if he goes with you and you're not playing well, and there's so many players like at your position, like that they feel like, okay, well, we got to move off this dude. We gave him his shot. We got to go play the next dude. To where if you're that big fish in a small pond, usually, you know what I'm saying? I always tell people, I'm giving them the game right now. I like, especially when you're talented, it was like Tony Snell in New Mexico. He was inconsistent, but you can't go get another Tony Snell in New Mexico. So you got to ride with him through everything until he figures it all the way out. But if he goes to Texas or some of the other schools that were recruiting him that are big-time schools, you get your shot, you're inconsistent like that, bro, we're off you. We got another McDonald's All-American. You're not even at McDonald's.
But yeah, because you champion the low major, the mid majors, right? You're a champion, an absolute champion of these type of schools and programs, which is fine. You love seeing the Blue Bloods lose. You love seeing you love seeing Goliath lose. You love it. I noticed that.
I love the right Pac-12 too, just not the Pac-12 that you like.
But let me ask you this: say we're talking fit, right? So say you're top level high school kid projected to go pretty high in the draft. You decided to pick a college. You go to a college that doesn't utilize you the right way. Do you stick it out at that college, or do you risk bouncing? Although, you know, you haven't been utilized the right way, so your draft stock isn't where it has been, but you really don't see or feel like this situation is going to be conducive for you in the future. Do you stay? Do you suck it up and say, hey, I believe in myself. We got some guys leaving. We got, you know, several seniors in my up ahead of me are graduating. Do you stay, or do you bounce to the league, or do you transfer and spend another year in college to show sort of the promise and reach that potential that people had you projected as before you spent this year?
That's a tough decision. Because if you leave, you got to go to the right spot.
Got to.
And if you stay, things have to change.
And how –
you know what I'm saying? Like, how are you playing? How is the coach using you? Like, it's tough because if you're thinking you're going to come in and do this and it hasn't materialized, so you're going to be feeling some type of way. You just are. And so you're coming back, you got to let go of that. Are you going to be able to let go of that? And if you leave, man, it has to work if you leave. You got to pick the right spot. So it's like, it's 50-50. It's like, man, you got to have some, that's where it comes down to having some hard conversations.
Yeah. I think there was a time where, you know, players like that would have stuck it out, would have stayed. Hey, you started, finish what you started. You know, I think that this time of basketball life, that doesn't happen anymore. Players are ready to bounce. Players are just ready to capitalize on the next situation that gets them going as quickly as possible. There's no reason to toil in some bullshit crap that isn't conducive to your game or highlighting your game. So, yeah. No, I get that.
That's all. You just got to, I mean, it's just like you said, you got to be surrounded by people that know the game, know the landscape, have real relationships with assistant coaches, the head coaches, you know, have real trust.
Let's touch on that for a second. What we talked about the relationships with the coaches, and I think it was you that tweeted out the other day, find you an assistant coach that speaks up on you to the head coach.
I said some assistant coaches will only ride for you in meetings if they recruited you. And Jay Hart said, man, that's why you can't send your kids to Buster. And it was like, I agree. I usually don't fall into that. I don't usually have that problem because I am like selective on who I like to rock with for that, those reasons. But there is true, you know, some coaches only ride. There's a lot of programs that have staffs that are my guy. So like I'm only riding for my guy who I recruited because I got to go back to that same AAU program and answer the call. So like I'm only, you know what I mean? And so when you have that on some staffs, then it could get tricky.
Oh, so to be clear, this allegiance to players now, it becomes based on the pipeline, right? The lifeblood of this particular assistant coach's job, because he has a plug with, say, DC Assault. And so if this one guy is coming from DC Assault, and if he doesn't treat a DC Assault guy right, he ain't never getting another dude. And they got some 2027s that are off the chain. And so is that how it goes, Clint?
I'm an independent guy. Yeah. And so it's like, you know, like, oh, we don't got no loyalty to him.
Word.
That's why you got to have your sweet spot, your program that you really rock with. And you got to like, you got to maintain that and keep them close. That's what that comes down to. Like as an independent guy, I'm not sending no player. I'm not sending no player to a school that has an AAU coach on the staff or has multiple players from the AAU program. That's just not smart.
So you really look at it that way. So when you mentioned roster breakdown, because this is going to be a very informative segment on the show, you're talking about not only who this guy is, how he played last year, et cetera. You're going back to AAU. You want to know who is this dude affiliated with on staff in the politics. So that's how you.
What I say is deeper than rap.
Hey, it is.
Like I'm not getting caught up in that because they got to go back to some. They got multiple players, or they've had multiple players in the past at certain places that you know what it is. Like I like to feel like I've had a lot of success with guys at San Diego State, and so if I have a guy that's a dude along the lines of Kawhi and Jamal and Jalen McDaniels, like you know, like they're gonna that's a good spot. Like we've had prior success, and I got good relationships with the coaches, and so that's how the game works. You know, like that's just the game is the game, man. And the sooner that you're real with yourself about how this thing goes, you could probably, as I like to say, save a basketball life.
I think that people in general don't really kind of grasp or digest or even think that far, except the really high level elite kind of basketball hoop heads. They're all around. There's plenty of them and they know. But like to the regular, you know, it's like, say, for instance, people listening to this show, they typically won't have that type of idea that's how things work or those are factors that they should consider if they had a child that was looking to go play on the next level.
Everything, KJ.
Yeah.
Everything on the table, bro.
Yeah.
Everything in the meetings, the conversations before. You know, the commitment takes place and the kid's like, okay, this is where I'm going. Like all the hard questions got to be answered, got to be asked.
Yeah.
You know, that's why it goes back to honesty at the front door. Because now, you know, there are some people that are watching this show. People know me from Twitter. People know me in the basketball world. Some people love me. Some people don't like me. I'm outspoken. I'm opinionated. If I don't like something, I'm going to speak on it. But I tell people, we get to school. We're going to act right. We're going to go to class and we're going to work hard.
Yeah. Easy.
Because they're going to have to be first and foremost. I'm not riding for nothing just to be riding for something. Like you're lazy. You're not doing. You got to do your part. There's accountability on all ends. We can't. What is this? We're not doing the dictatorship. I'm going to hold the kid accountable. But nobody's going to hold me accountable. Come on now. We're not doing that. Accountability is all the way around. You know, and so that's where a lot of this, you know, you see it sucks because you see a lot of kids that, you know, you don't take some of these stuff we're talking to in consideration, and then you get to a school and it's like you feel like you were led on. You know, and this is serious because this is like people, this ain't no game.
All your eggs is in that basket. Yeah.
This ain't no game. Everybody's home. It's just a game.
No, this is my life.
No. No, I done seen what that round ball done did for multiple players.
Facts.
I done seen what the round ball up close did for Kawhi Leonard. Generations and generations have changed in his family because of this round ball. Tony Snell, generations and generations, like, he got his family out the hood. For real, for real. And it's many kids like him. Jamal Franklin, like, you know, single moms that are out here grinding, working multiple jobs to keep the lights on type stuff. Like, nah, this ain't no, nah. Those parents, their babies changed their life forever. Their feet are kicked up. They ain't working no more.
Serious business.
Serious business. This ain't no game, bro. Like, what you talking about? Like, you over here lying to yourself, like, boy, you better stop. See how much money the Clippers are worth?
Facts.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, what?
Back.
Yeah, it's like, come on now. Like, but it's all about being put in the situation. And it starts in high school, then it goes to college. You know, like you coached on the JBA, like you were up close with the ball situation. You've been rocking with the balls forever. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people had different opinions of LeVar and the way he, you know, I always say everyone can't be LeVar because everyone don't got LaMelo, Lonzo, and Jello, number one. But if you just take some things away from how he did coach his kids and how he raised them as basketball players, like we got to see that part, obviously. Like, the most important thing he did with LaMelo was he always protected his mental.
Okay.
You know, he never let nobody mess with his mental. And now you see that now you see, and this is what you're getting. Remember when everybody was like, the shot selection is, he can't be doing that. Like, he can't be shooting those deep threes. Yeah. He's playing so free. Like, he needs to tighten up. Oh, okay. Tighten up. Second year All-Star game. Cut it
please,
out.
Please. Tighten like, that up.
Tighten that up. His dad was not rolling for no funnies.
None.
His dad was not rolling for no funnies. Like, he basically pulled him out of school as a junior because he was like, no, not rolling with how the coach is trying to coach my son. Like, nope, this isn't going to work. Like, I know what I have. And he always said it. Like, he stood on that. And that confidence, man, when you have somebody that's talented, that's skilled, and that's confident.
Over. All season.
Come on. So, Daddy Ball is approved.
I'm rolling with Daddy Ball, okay?
Daddy Ball is approved. It is. You told J. Crow that. Like, what are you talking about?
Daddy Ball is all good, dog. Are you kidding me? J. Crow.
Don't let society try to knock you off your pivot and think that you're like, no, sir.
Don't be influenced by that. Don't be listening to these people. That, please. Imagine if LeVar would have listened. Heck no, man. Heck no. But, brother, man, I appreciate your time today, my man. We got to run. I can't wait till we jump off on March Madness, man. As soon as that tournament hit, man, we will be going live. We will be recording pods. Huh?
Are you going to the Pac-12 tournament next week?
Yeah, I'm going to go. I'm going to go out there for a couple of days. You going?
Yeah, I'll be there. I'm going to pull up on you.
All right, perfect. Clint, where can the people find you and connect with you on Twitter?
Clint, what am I? I don't even know what my handle?
Let me find it for you. My bad. You can find Clint on Twitter at Clint Parks
05.
At Clint Parks 05 on Twitter. My man, thank you so much for your time, brother. And I'll see you real soon.
All right, AJ. Sounds good, brother.